We would love to know about your experience at Synopsys, your background, and what you did there.
Let me briefly describe my background. I retired from Synopsys a couple of years ago, after more than 25 years in a senior role, involved in the group that includes RTL simulation, hardware, formal and static verification. Before that, I worked for a company in the synthesis and front-end implementation area, then switched to verification. Earlier, I worked at Cadence on system-level design, and at various companies, AMD, Cirrus Logic, VLSI, on chip design and CAD tools.
We would love to know more about the digital design steps. Where is it more competitive? Who has the monopoly? Since you worked at both Cadence and Synopsys, what is the market share between them? We know quite a bit about the different steps, but we would love to know more about the difference between Cadence and Synopsys.
Let's not talk about analog. Maybe we'll touch on it later. Cadence is in a very strong position there. On the digital side, when you talk about digital design, let's discuss a few areas so we are clear about the numbers and competitive dynamics. The first step is RTL level verification for digital design. VCS from Synopsys versus Incisive from Cadence. ZeBu versus Palladium from Cadence. Formality versus Conformal. In that area, Synopsys is about $1.5 billion and Cadence is around $1 billion. Synopsys is ahead, but both have tools in almost every domain. The second stage of the design flow is digital RTL synthesis, where Synopsys originated. It's called Design Compiler. Cadence acquired a company called Ambit for this. The next few steps include transistor-level verification, place and route, layout-level verification, and TCAD, technology CAD for process and device modeling. For the implementation flow, Synopsys is around $2.5 to $3 billion, depending on the year or who you talk to, and Cadence is less than $2 billion. Synopsys is much better on the front end. On the digital side, nobody really has dominance like on the analog side. On front-end verification, it's $1.5 billion versus $1 billion. On implementation, it's $2.7 billion versus $2 billion, and so on. One area where Synopsys really dominates is digital IP, almost $2 billion versus Cadence's $0.5 billion. That's been challenged recently, but it's an area where Synopsys truly dominates.
Within digital, are there any tools where Synopsys or Cadence has dominant share?
Synopsys has dominant share in Design Compiler for synthesis. In fact, big Cadence houses like NVIDIA and Apple, which are dominant Cadence customers, still use Design Compiler because it's been the standard for 20 to 30 years. The second tool on the Synopsys side is PrimeTime for static timing analysis. Because it's a sign-off tool, people want to stick with it. Almost all the companies I visited used PrimeTime as a standard tool. Innovus and Fusion are competitive. Depending on who you talk to, one is ahead of the other because everyone is moving forward. The other area where there is dominance, not between Synopsys and Cadence, but with Siemens EDA, is physical verification. Calibre, IC Validator from Synopsys. Cadence has a tool as well, but they are not as strong because of the sign-off nature. Once you have the sign-off area, people don't want to change.
You said 2.7 billion versus 2 billion. How much of the 2.7 billion is PrimeTime and Design Compiler?
Depending on which product you buy, whether you buy individual PrimeTime and Design Compiler licenses, which some Cadence houses do, versus Intel and AMD, who buy the entire enterprise suite. Relatively speaking, Design Compiler and PrimeTime use much fewer licenses because you just push a button and it generates gates from RTL. It's been doing that for so many years, you don't worry about it. But Fusion Compiler for place and route, you need to do it multiple times to get the PPA right, plus floor planning and place and route. The majority of the digital implementation side is Fusion Compiler. Design Compiler and PrimeTime are much smaller.
If you look at the 2.7 billion, the majority is place and route?
The majority is maybe $2 billion plus for place and route. Design Compiler is about $400 to $500 million, and PrimeTime is around the same. It's closer to $1.8 billion for implementation.
So PrimeTime is as big as Design Compiler?
PrimeTime is very big. Design Compiler has alternatives, Genus and others from Cadence. If you're using Innovus, A lot of people like to stay with the Synthesis front end from Cadence because you have consistency. If you use Design Compiler like Apple and NVIDIA, and then use Innovus, there's some translation you have to do in terms of the files. But PrimeTime is indispensable, like Calibre sign-off. People don't want to mess with it, so they command better pricing.
That makes absolute sense. That also makes sense for these AI tools that they have, the Cerebrus and the DSO.AI.
VSO.AI, ASO, DSO.
If I have, for example, a Design Compiler and Innovus, can I do DSO with that?
No, because DSO works on the place and route. You go through the whole place and route. It doesn't matter who you use for the synthesis, Design Compiler or Genus. It works on the logs generated by place and route tools and where the timing, meaning the clock frequency, and the power dissipation and area blowup happen. They go back automatically without the design engineers who used to do it before and keep running it until you reach the target. You cannot use DSO if you use Innovus.
But you could use Genus and then Fusion Compiler, then DSO?
No, because DSO works on specific Synopsys parameters and logs. But you brought up an interesting question. If you see Chip Agent, Premise AI, and many of these new EDA AI startups, they are getting traction because almost all customers have both tools. They don't want to be left behind, so they always use the other one. They may have the majority of licenses from Synopsys and the majority of licenses from Cadence, but they always have a checkmark asking, if I use Innovus, do I have an advantage? Then they immediately ask Synopsys to fix the issue. Those independent AI startups need to use information from both sides because these logs are public knowledge. They can do it. But DSO cannot work on Innovus. Cerebrus cannot work on Fusion Compiler because they cannot understand the logs.
How come a startup can?
It's interesting. When you buy Synopsys tools, the customer signs an NDA that you cannot share the information, the logs, and the numbers you can get with the competition. For helping Cadence, you can share at a high level to make sure Cadence is behind 5% and needs to catch up. But you can't share all the logs. That's part of the legal agreement. The new startups are going there as if they're design engineers who have access to both the logs, and the logs belong to the customer, not Synopsys. They can give access to the independent third party, the independent startup.
If the startup does not have a place and route tool, they just have an AI tool?
Yes. The only thing that these AI startups do is read all the information in multiple iterations of place and route. I'm just talking about DSO. And use their AI algorithm, reinforcement learning, and others to drive the tool multiple times to achieve the PPA goals. Because they work on both sides, they have somewhat of an advantage. Like I said, some people use Design Compiler, then Innovus, and then PrimeTime. Most customers have mixed flows, and that's why these AI startups are getting invested.
Have these AI startups gained share?
Right now it is small. You have to understand that the main goal for Synopsys and Cadence is not to sell and monetize DSO or Cerebrus. The main goal that we used to talk about when I was at Synopsys and exec forums is the AI flows increase the number of licenses. For example, DSO for the Fusion Compiler. Because with massively parallel compute data, whether you are cloud or on-prem, because it is automated, it used to run 1, 2, or 10 runs overnight. Now it runs hundreds of them overnight because you want to reduce time to tape out. Customers who used to own 10 licenses will need 100 licenses, especially people like Google and the big hyperscalers.
Are they willing to pay for that? How do you price that?
The big customers like Apple, NVIDIA, Samsung, Google, and Meta have no budget constraints. The most important thing is, can they get that chip out in a year compared to 2 to 3 years right now? That gives them a huge competitive advantage. For example, if TPU 7 comes out in a year, they can compete with AWS, Google Cloud, and so on. If you remember, in 2021, 2023, and 2024, there was huge growth in EDA because all of these companies started this verticalization. All these companies, Apple for example, started designing their own chips, and they needed this huge number of licenses. Then AI tools started in about 2022, 2023, with 500,000 to 100,000 tapeouts that increased. We can talk about why the growth flattened out after that.
Don't you think they'd ask for a bulk discount? They'd be like, hey, I'm running AI. I'm using 10 times as many tools. Revenue didn't go up 10x, so how does that work?
You have to understand the EDA seat licensing model. There is a book price and there is a discounted price. For 10 licenses, you don't pay 10 times one license. There are bundles. The most important thing, and I used to work with all the salespeople in all the regions, is quarterly growth and finally the yearly growth. If Google spends $100 million on something, the sales guys are incentivized because in a top-down approach, their quota is 10% growth. Can I give them more stuff cheaper but get $110 million? But it is a 3-year subscription license, so you renegotiate after 3 years. The number of licenses doesn't necessarily proportionally grow the revenue, but sometimes it is discounted at 80%, by the way.
I'm aware. But if Synopsys wants people to use DSO, then I would give them a discount. But if I know that they're just using some other AI...
Of course. That is part of the deal. It's not only just DSO, but say they are using Joules, the power estimation tool, and Synopsys says, you use our power compiler or whatever, then they will give them a discount. It's not just DSO, it's any other displacement. Let me just get this out of the way. What happened is once Google and all these companies had this massive design starts, that's how 2021, 2022, and 2023 just went up. The EDA business, as long as I was there, is always a cyclic business. Usually everything works out. Some companies start design separately from the others. But because of this whole AI infrastructure explosion during 2021 and 2022, the design starts have slowed down. People are just working on all those designs that they started. That's why for the next few quarters, maybe the next couple of years, it's going to be challenging for both Synopsys and Cadence until the new designs start again.
Everybody's designing their own chip, basically?
Almost. All the big players. Another phenomenon that happened is that because of advanced nodes, 7 nanometer, 5 nanometer, many startups cannot afford to have a design start. A lot of startup design starts that Synopsys used to sell licenses for have declined in favor of selling more to hyperscalers and the big players.
So the big players all have chip design teams, but startups are not designing any chips?
Yes, because they cannot afford it. I think it can cost $400 to $500 million for advanced nodes, just in NRE, non-recurring expenses.
Do you think that is why it is slow? Is it not China also?
China is also a big factor, but as we talked about, the EDA tools are 3-year subscription licenses, so they have the right, and Synopsys keeps collecting quarterly payments until the negotiations and the administration allows it or not. Now it is allowed. But the big thing that happened in Q4, or maybe Q3 last year, is that Intel canceled a lot of IP, and China canceled a lot of IP. That really slowed down the growth for Synopsys.
How can you cancel IP?
In the IP business, especially with foundries like Intel, it works like this. Intel is by far 10-12% of Synopsys revenue for many years, number one. In fact, our CEO, Sassine Ghazi, came from the Intel account success. Before the new Intel CEO came, Lip-Bu Tan, the foundry part of Intel, really wanted to be competitive with TSMC on the advanced node, but they fell behind. But remember, nobody can use that node as a customer, Apple or whatever, unless you can port all your IP. For the design tools, you have to port a little bit on the standard cell libraries and all that. But on the IP, you have to port and validate. So they put so much effort and doubled down on Intel so that the Junipers and Ciscos of the world could use those interface IPs, which are very fast-changing protocols. Next HDMI, next MIPI, next PCIe. Synopsys expected them to really grow the business, not just Intel. And then the Intel design groups, the business units, they canceled the expected IP order because they were not ready with those nodes. And who knows, maybe Lip-Bu will invite Cadence to really benchmark where they are.
Because it happened, right? You would think for Synopsys to include that in their guidance. I mean, everybody knew, you knew, that Intel was not going to buy this stuff, right?
Yes, yes, yes. But Lip-Bu is very astute. If Cadence is not ready, just because of his relationship, it is not like he will just double down. He needs to have the best IP possible. There are some new arteries, and I forget others, ex-Synopsys execs who have started that. And they are also very competitive, because they can only focus on the new, fast-changing HBM and the AI protocols. They do not have to support PCIe 1, 2, 3, where Synopsys has to keep supporting those. So yeah, they are also doing well.
Can we go back to the verification quickly? Could we talk about the hardware verification? So, ZeBu, etc. How does it compare to Palladium? Is it exactly the same? Why FPGA? Why custom?
I can talk a little bit more there, obviously without disclosing any confidential information, because I managed that business since we acquired a company called Eve from Paris in 2012 or 2013, I guess. And then it was a $30 million business, and when I left, it was $300 million in 10 years. So, very interesting story. The difference between Palladium and ZeBu, let's talk about first the architecture-wise, and Veloce, by the way, don't forget Veloce, the Siemens EDA. They have three different architectures. Palladium came from IBM and then QuickTurn, kind of a spin-off of IBM, and the architecture was based on tiny, massively parallel processor units, where it still is an execution of a code like GPU or whatever. The compiler has to generate a code and distribute over there, and it is small processors, and so it is a massively parallel, tiny processor-based architecture, where we will talk about the advantages later. While Veloce, before Eve started, was based on custom FPGA. They have to tape out chips every 3-4 years. But it is their own FPGA architecture, where they can program the synthesized version of design from the customer into FPGA, like ZeBu does. And then ex-Veloce people, they started this ZeBu in France, in Paris. And they decided to use off-the-shelf FPGA from Xilinx. You know, Vertex 2, 3, 4 was a disaster. Then 5, and now VU19P. So they stuck on the belief that advancement in Xilinx will bring advancement in their performance. So these are the three architectures.
So Mentor uses their own FPGA?
Yes, they design their own FPGA, custom FPGA.
Okay.
And Veloce is very strong in Juniper, Cisco, because historically they have developed this networking solution that works very well, even in Broadcom, but they are declining in share. Palladium came out with the Z3, it's the latest version, while ZeBu's CX6 was supposed to come out in 2024 after I left. But, you know, who knows how late it is on VU19P to really compete with Z3. And the reason Z3 is doing so well, especially at NVIDIA, Apple, and now Samsung is doubling down, is because it has closed or caught up on the runtime performance gap against ZeBu. ZeBu's main advantage was because your hardware is synthesized into FPGA. You are not running the code like in Palladium. It is synthesized, and then you take advantage of the FPGA field. It was 3x, 4x, 5x faster than old Palladium. With their new architecture, I don't know how, but I believe it is 7 nanometer, and the advanced node is shrinking. The performance has caught up, and they always have an advantage, sometimes 10x on the compile times. There are two metrics. The first is runtime, which is after you compile the code. And compile time is crucial sometimes because you make some changes. In ZeBu, you have to wait for 10 or 12 hours to compile the code into FPGA. But Palladium can do it in 2 or 3 hours.
So it's with the new Palladium Z3 that this changed?
Yes, a big gap that they caught up. ZeBu's VS5 and ZS5 have been available for at least 6 years, maybe 8 years. They haven't moved to the next Xilinx chip for whatever reason. There were internal issues and execution problems. Some of us left and some key people went to Cadence. The Cadence Palladium group is run by some of my ex-managers. They lost a lot of people, but that's an execution issue, not a technical one. Very soon you will see the announcement. ZS6 is in early beta right now and will hopefully leapfrog over Z3, but we don't know. I hope I answered the question about Palladium versus ZeBu before I go into HAPS and Protium. The other two hardware products.
So the main advantage of ZeBu was that it had faster runtime, and then Palladium caught up. In terms of market share, would you say that Palladium has a higher market share? Is it more expensive too?
Before I answer that question, there's another advantage that ZeBu had. Palladium needs massive cooling. If you go into data centers where people have installed it, I used to go to Apple's, you will see air and liquid cooling. It's massive. ZeBu just uses air cooling with fans because it's FPGA based, and that translates to much more stable hardware for ZeBu versus Palladium. The joke in the industry was, there's always a Cadence guy sitting there to replace a card once a week. Hopefully they have improved it. So that was another advantage of ZeBu.
Reliability.
Can you repeat your question?
In terms of market share for Palladium versus ZeBu, and if ZeBu was more expensive, And how much more expensive is it?
ZeBu is cheaper than Palladium for obvious reasons. All ZeBu does is buy chips. It's one of the biggest Xilinx customers, so we get good pricing. Obviously, it is still buying Vertex 5, the old chip, and puts it into PCBs, printed circuit boards.
That's it?
That's the basic stuff. Of course, they have to do some other customization. The IP of ZeBu is in the software, not the hardware like Palladium. Palladium software is like a C, C++ compiler. You read the RTL code and generate the assembly level code or equivalent for Palladium. You don't have to synthesize it. But in ZeBu, all you do is program those FPGAs and distribute, or we call it partitioning, the massive designs into multiple FPGA modules and multiple ZeBus. They can use up to 32 ZeBu boxes for one design. That is all in our software. All the ZeBu hardware has is a bunch of FPGAs. That's it.
Do you program the Xilinx FPGA? Do they have to program the Xilinx on Vivado by itself?
No, we use Vivado for the final compilation. Vivado has to program the CLB, the configurable logic blocks. The smallest element in Xilinx is like a 6-input, 2-output combination block, and there are registers and wires that go through. So they have to do that physical programming. But we don't use Vivado's front-end tools, which normal customers would use. We use our tools and then drive Vivado for the final physical programming.
So the value is in your front-end tools, where you can put one chip on 32 machines?
32 machines, and each machine has 12 FPGAs. It's a massive machine. It's all about partitioning and making sure that one module is not waiting for the other module. You have to partition equal load so that you don't keep one waiting for the other. That is the key, similar to GPU. To answer your question, ZeBu is cheaper to manufacture and more reliable. But in terms of actual revenue, ZeBu started very small. It was $30 million when we acquired it, and it's about $300 to $350 million right now. I don't know exactly, but Palladium is almost $500 million. The reason is some of the biggest companies have standardized on Palladium. The key reason is it's much faster in compilation. Engineers come in the morning, see some bugs, fix the bug, and start within hours. It may run massively, but they have so many Palladiums installed already, so they keep using them. NVIDIA doesn't use ZeBu, Apple doesn't use ZeBu, Broadcom uses some ZeBu, but mainly Palladium. A lot of these big customers have standardized on ZeBu, and with Z3, it's a bit of a challenge for Synopsys to catch up. Palladium is a bit bigger. After this, we can talk about the prototyping, FPGA-based prototyping tools, HAPS and Protium, whenever you're ready.
On Palladium, you need 32 ZeBu machines to do a chip. How many Palladiums do you need to do a chip?
I saw a Z3 announcement. I don't know exactly, but you can do multiple Palladiums and handle up to 50 billion gate chips. Not transistors, 50 billion gates.
What's the difference?
Each gate equals 4 transistors, and a gate is a 2-input NAND gate. This is the standard semiconductor metric.
When did you buy Eve?
I remember going there in late 2012 when we acquired it.
So you won a bunch of market share against Cadence?
Yes, exactly. They were struggling because their money was running out, and their key customer partner, Intel, was getting very upset because they were just late and late. The reason is they did not have expertise in the years of software that VCS, which I also used to run, had on the front end, reading the RTL, reading and synthesizing. They didn't have that. They used Synopsys synthesis in the front-end technology, and then they caught up. At that time, the two big players were Palladium and Veloce.
What happened to Veloce?
I'm not sure, but it looks like their architecture is tapering out. I don't think it can scale as much as the new Xilinx chips and the new Palladium chips because of the architecture. It's a technical thing. The second thing is, I don't think that's a huge focus area within Siemens. Siemens is focusing more on their customer automotive and system level and whatever they need. It's a big business, but it's a declining business. The last I heard was $150 million, but it may be declining.
And they're going to let it decline?
Yes. What I heard is the reason Siemens acquired Mentor is because software is a lot more operating margin friendly than hardware and all that. Veloce and ZeBu, all of them. Palladium is not like 40% operating margin that software can derive. It used to be like 18%, now maybe 21%. The next chip, ZS6, because new chips are always more expensive. Xilinx. So that's why, what I understood is that it wasn't that interested in growing that business, but it cannot screw their customers, so it will still keep supporting them.
I heard it's strong in networking and auto, Veloce.
Yes, exactly. That's where they make their money. And by the way, Intel has a lot of Veloce, long legacy before ZeBu came, and they hardly have any Palladium.
And now HAPS and Protium?
So HAPS we acquired, I forget the name of the company from Switzerland or somewhere. Our IP group acquired it, then it came to us, the verification group, and it was a very small business, $20 million. Since then, what has happened is, as we talked about, at that time ZeBu was in its infancy, and Palladium was notoriously slow, and it wasn't like a system-level tool. The two customers that really drove our roadmap for HAPS, which is also Xilinx FPGA-based, but there's a difference, are Apple and NVIDIA. They are massive. They buy massive HAPS. And HAPS is one of the fastest-growing products in Synopsys right now. Better than ZeBu, better than VCS, better than Fusion Compiler. The reason is this FPGA prototyping tool. Protium tried to emulate it, but Protium is less than $80 or $100 million now, while HAPS is probably caught up to ZeBu around $300 million. The reason is that NVIDIA likes to do actual bring-up of software. If you try to do it in Palladium, which is what they use for emulation, it will take weeks. There's no way. But with the latest Xilinx chip, V19P, HAPS is ahead of ZeBu. You can run your software, especially the AI software and training and inferencing, with this massive installation of HAPS at NVIDIA. All the GPUs, all the AI chips, Blackwell, all of them are validated using HAPS at NVIDIA. The same thing goes for Apple and MediaTek. Synopsys cleaned up with HAPS, and we didn't realize what the use case was that would really explode this business. But the use case is software bring-up. The second part is you can connect HAPS to your real-world interfaces as if your chip is talking to the outside world, as if you are on a PCB. You connect them and then you get all the outside input, text, images, whatever, and you bring up your software and see how fast your new chip will run.
If we compare it to ZeBu, how many machines do people use?
If I'm using 32 ZeBu, how many HAPS? You can't use the whole chip validation on HAPS. It is not designed for that. You do module by module. Suppose your CPU and all that. You break it up into the HAPS modules. But you can run almost unlimited numbers of HAPS, hundreds of HAPS. You can connect it, but it becomes a little bit more complex to manage that. But you don't do full chip bring up using HAPS.
Can you explain that a bit more?
What happens is that in a massive chip, you can do the whole chip validation in ZeBu. But still, people use a smaller subset to make it much faster, because some of the modules don't add value in the real-time validation, like analog to digital and a lot of other outside blocks, peripheral blocks. In HAPS, what are you trying to do? You're mainly trying to bring up software, all the memory, processor, all of that. You create a separate model from your complete RTL chip model, or just cut it out, and implement that with some test bench and driving interfaces only for the HAPS. They have figured this out, how to do this. Once you bring up this HAPS compute part of the chip to bring up software, then you give a heads up to your systems architect team that this part is validated. Go ahead with the system level validation by putting other things.
So I have to finish using ZeBu, then I move to HAPS?
Correct, always. No, first you finish using VCS software, which is the slowest, because ZeBu and HAPS cost a lot. You want to do the first level of validation using software-based simulation. Then you go to ZeBu to do the next level. But smaller software bring up, but massive validation. And the third level, some people who are ZeBu customers don't use HAPS because they can use ZeBu to bring up the software. ZeBu also now supports some of the... You guys should Google a product called EP2 that was announced.
That's ZeBu and HAPS together, right?
Correct. But it is based on HAPS. But you use ZeBu software on top of it. The reason is that you can have the HAPS architecture to connect massive numbers of external devices and all that, but you can do ZeBu or HAPS. This was a big success because of the HAPS customers. NVIDIA, Apple, MediaTek, all of these. They can do much faster validation depending on what stage of the design validation. They may not be ready for the HAPS version, but they may be ready for the ZeBu. But they have these thousands of HAPS that they have bought just sitting, doing nothing. So then they started using that as validation for emulation.
So with EP2, is that replacing Palladium?
It's not replacing Palladium. but it can do exactly the same thing as Palladium, Veloce, and ZeBu on a smaller number of gates. It cannot expand the size as Palladium and ZeBu can, because HAPs are designed to be smaller modules. However, you can start the original design that you are preparing to go to HAPs. That's what Apple does. I told you that it's a subset of the total design that they validate on Palladium for bring up of the software. They start doing ZeBu because they're not ready for the HAPs. Some of the modules may not be ready, so they don't waste it. That's the whole reason.
And then when you use the HAPs, you basically take just the compute part?
Yes, because the whole point is to bring up software. So now you cannot tape out your chips before the software team signs off saying that the software runs well on this. It used to be that you just sign off the chip like Intel x86. Forget about the software, let the chips come back, then you debug the bug, then again you go back to the foundry. Right now it's too expensive and too time-consuming. The purpose is to use your idly sitting thousands of HAPS modules for exactly ZeBu-like emulation runs. ZeBu software will partition it into different ZeBu modules, different HAPS modules, and you push a button, and it will run just like ZeBu, but on a smaller portion of the design that ultimately goes into HAPS. Basically, you don't use the ZeBu or the Palladium that are sitting around. Others can use them. You can use your HAPS for the emulation phase of your validation. The point I want to make is, suppose you have idle ZeBus that are not used by anybody. I would rather use that, because it's much easier to do and you can do much bigger designs. But the whole point of this is that we wanted people to buy HAPS, especially the Palladium customers, and try out ZeBu-like functionality because they didn't have ZeBu. So they don't know what ZeBu is. That's the whole point. It became a very big success at Apple, NVIDIA, and others.
And EP2, is that with the new Xilinx chip?
The latest version of EP2 after I left may be with the new Xilinx chip. But when I released the EP2, it was with Vertex, the same as the S5.
Do the software and hardware verification work together? For example, you were saying that Apple likes to use HAPS. Would this make them buy VCS?
Very good question. Fortunately, as we talked about, there are some Cadence big houses. They would buy mostly Cadence. But as we talked about, Design Compiler, Primetime, and also VCS, the software verification, are very standard. VCS is much bigger in terms of revenue than Incisive. Incisive came later. So VCS is another industry standard. But as an example, Apple used to be only using Incisive. We changed that by showing how compatible the VCS is for the overall validation, but also with HAPS because it's the same front end and Apple is a big HAPS customer. That's why we wanted them to try out ZeBu on EP2 and so on. So yes, it does. But VCS is already a very dominant standard in the industry for software verification.
What do you think about the EDA industry now? Do you think that most of the monetization is coming from verification? How are they going to monetize going forward? Is it verification? Is it AI tools?
No, it is not the AI tools, because you can't sell people 100,000 seats of DSO. You don't need that. But you can sell people 1,000 seats of Fusion Compiler or VCS or massive HAPS, like hundreds of HAPS modules. So they cannot monetize the AI, but they will use AI as a tool to do things to increase the number of licenses that they need. And that's how they monetize it. But second and more important, they want to incentivize customers for displacement of Cadence tools, saying if you use DSO, it works 5 times better for your PPA goals if you use Fusion Compiler versus Innovus and Genus. Of course, this is hypothetical. And by the way, there's a VSO on the verification test bench, constraint closure and all that. But that's how they want to monetize it, by hurting Cadence. But also 10%, 15% growth in increasing number of licenses. But you will never, at least in my opinion, see an earnings call saying DSO revenue increased 10 times.
But you think, going forward, if you put it all together, growth slows?
Yes, since this is my opinion, everybody may have a different opinion. But because of the cyclic nature, there are 2 phenomena happening. Just like 3-4 years back, it kind of exploded. Now, until the next negotiation happens of the expiring 3-year subscription licenses for EDA tools. I'm not talking about IP and hardware, which is immediate. You recognize the revenue, but the subscription license software growth will be slow, 8% whatever, for the next few quarters until these contracts come up for negotiation. Secondly, IP is in a huge downturn right now. They are reprioritizing for TSMC. It will take time. It takes time for new nodes to validate, and people are still waiting. And as we talked about, Cadence reversed that decision not to invest in IP originally. They are also now big IP. They acquired a lot of IP companies, and there are some new IP startups. So software is a little challenging. Number two, IP is a little challenging. But the bright spot, and this is what I hear from my Synopsys contacts, is hardware. I'm sure Cadence also, but hardware is doing very well, especially HAPS. And when ZS6 comes, hopefully it catches up with Z3. It's going to be interesting to see. But it's really growing very fast. Hardware sometimes was growing at an 18, 20% rate, and you recognize revenue right away. So when you are short, we ship at a discount, some ZeBu to Samsung or some, just to make up for the revenue. And I always look at one number, the time-based versus upfront revenue, to see what they did.
Understood. Regarding the IP downturn, do you think it's due to bad product decisions?
No. What happened is they let go Joachim Kunkel, the guy who really grew this business to $2 billion from nothing.
Why did they let him go?
The new CEO let go of my boss and all the GMs and made it a functional organization. I have never seen this before. Cadence also has a business unit structure, but there are no business units anymore at Synopsys. There is no verification business unit leader. My boss was the GM responsible for achieving the revenue. There is no IP GM. It is all R&D because the new CEO comes from sales and wanted to distribute the quota for everybody. It is a functional organization, so they let go of all the GMs. There are no GMs anymore, just R&D people, customer deployment people, salespeople, and marketing people. Different organizations all reporting into Sassine.
That sounds dumb, no?
What do I know? They don't have an experienced leader in IP. They have a very good leader in implementation and verification, a super leader in R&D, Shankar Krishnamurthy. But a guy called Charlie Matar, who was doing consulting, Sassine appointed him as IP head.
So another Lebanese guy, then?
Yes, there are lots of Lebanese guys running the office now. You guys are quite plugged in. I'm impressed. He recruited top Lebanese guys from all over, Qualcomm, NXP, and Raja Kadouri. Do you know him?
No, but I've heard of him.
He's also doing very well. Charlie Matar will now take over, or has taken over, after the big debacle. Earlier it was a marketing guy before. I forget his name. Hopefully Sassine can turn it around.
But Charlie does not know IP, you're saying?
He doesn't, but he will learn because he comes from the customer side, and IP needs customer-centric people.
But I guess Art de Goose was good as well, right?
Art was good, but the board wanted a succession plan for a long time. Every company has succession, and he was getting into his 70s. Sassine was the star at Intel and TI, NXP. I worked with Sassine traveling all around the world, displacing Intel. He's a very dynamic guy. The board picked him, and the rest is history. He wanted to run it his own way, not with business units. He's experimenting with that, and he got consulting on this change of organization structure from Apple. His buddy in Apple, Johnny Srouji, you can look him up, Israeli guy, guide him to go towards this and how the Apple product guys hold the power. R&D delivers what the product guys define, and he wanted to implement similar things. Earlier, R&D and business units decided what goes into our products. We worked with customers and interfaced with them. But now it's changed. The marketing guys and product guys define it.
So now it's what? The marketing guys and product guys do what?
They define the roadmap. Business units don't exist anymore.
But that sounds like a lot. You have that, and then you bought Ansys, and it's all at the same time.
Yes, $35 billion. And by the way, since Synopsys stock fell to $400 or whatever, $416, $420, usually we used to buy back the stock to increase the value and reduce the number of stocks outstanding. They can't do that now because they have huge debt, like $18 billion or whatever.
I know.
That also goes away. They have to monetize Ansys. Ansys is, on paper, a great rationale because of the shrinking node. People cannot sign off until the electromagnetic, and all that is validated using Ansys. But if you realize $700 or $800 million out of Ansys's $2.5 billion is in semi or electronics. Everything else is system, like designing BMW and all that. They want to capitalize on Omniverse, that solution with NVIDIA. NVIDIA was one of the critical drivers for the Ansys decision.
Because they're going to move these solvers to GPUs?
Yes, they are more interested in using Ansys technology, the the Red Hawk and the clock effects and all that, but also the non-semiconductor products for data center design and validation, because they are into this data center massive solutions to enable the chip sales. Intel was another key driver for this decision.
Do you think they can accelerate? Because I heard Ansys was slow.
They will accelerate using the GPU version of VCS, the massively parallel version of a lot of our software that we have already done. We will lend that technology to them for making it much faster. It's a software technology. Anybody can use it now. You will see in 2026, Shankar is going to announce the joint roadmap.
Do you still own Synopsys stock?
Yes, but not a lot. I had to get rid of it, unfortunately, because of my package when I left 3 months ago, which worked out very well.
Why did you leave?
They let me go. All the senior leaders, they let them go. My boss and then Joachim and his top people. They let the senior leadership go because they wanted to go to this new organization.
When was this?
It was mainly in the 2023 timeframe. They let the HR, marketing, all the top leadership are out.
So IP was messed up after he let go of the business unit?
Yes. Joachim was the last person to go.
When did he go?
I met him right after he left, so maybe sometime in early 2025.